Chapter 8 "You... wait, what?" I said, as I tried to process what Rylan was telling me. "How can you see my dreams?"
Forget I said anything,"
Rylan nearly shouted and rushed toward the door.
"It's getting late. I think the Porax need to come in."
"Right," I started. But before I could demand an answer to my question, he slipped around me, raced across the barn, and fled through the side door.
"Rylan, stop!"
I ran after him, but as I closed the distance between us, I could hear him muttering one word under his breath between suppressed sobs.
"Stupid! Stupid! Stupid!"
"Rylan!" I yelled again. But he was too wrapped up in his head to listen to me properly, and he tried to hurtle over the fence that enclosed the estate's southwestern pasture. Tried was the key word, but he failed to clear the fence when the toe of his boot scraped the topmost beam and sent him sprawling.
"Gah!"
he screamed, and tumbled ass over elbow until he landed with a painful sounding
oof.
When he finally came to a stop, he immediately drew his knees up and folded himself over his clasped arms.
"Stupid! Stupid! Stupid!"
He thumped his head against the brace of his forearms as he chastised himself again. Then he gave a wet sniff and went silent. When it seemed like no other outbursts were apparent, and he was at least done running for now, I approached and sat on the grassy hill next to him. "I'm just going to keep you company," I said, and I draped my own forearms over my tented knees as I watched the two oxroach creatures Big Ben and his brother Jerry graze on the sweet-smelling grass. The sun was already getting low in the sky, and I mused at how the days seemed to be getting shorter. I was dimly reminded that the world I was now on was vastly different from my own, and I had to consider that time might go a little faster than I was used to. Eventually, after sitting in silence just observing the Porax in the ever-approaching dusk, Rylan tipped over rigidly where he sat and leaned against my side.
"Please don't be mad,"
he mumbled through his arms in a small voice. "I'm not mad," I said, and leaned back into his balled-up frame. "Confused, maybe, and a little concerned about you, but not mad."
"I promise I won't do it anymore,"
he whispered. "Look at me, please," I instructed, and patiently waited for him to raise his tear-streaked face. "Can we start by you telling me exactly what it is you've been doing? Just tell me as best as you can." The stable boy took several calming breaths as if he was gearing himself up to reveal some life-altering secret, and I placed a solid hand on his back to try and get him to calm down and not be so freaked out.
Ever since I was little,
Rylan started in a rough voice that started and stopped like an old car. He cleared his throat and tried again.
"Ever since I was little, I've had this ability to visit people's dreams."
"How is that possible?" I asked in a calm voice, even though the revelation was a huge and unexpected one.
"I'm not originally from Nata Isle,"
he went on to say, as he unconsciously snuggled closer.
"I was born in a small wandering village in West Alem. Before I was conceived, my village was visited by a traveller. He seemed nice at first, and he showed the village many useful things, like how to start fires instantly with a little device, and other things. But he wasn't very nice for long. I didn't find this out until much later, but apparently this traveller was my father."
"What happened to him?" I asked gently.
"He wanted my mother for himself, but she was already betrothed to the village leader. So he convinced her she loved him by entering her dreams and manipulating them,"
he said, as his expression grew dark.
"Somehow, her betrothed found out about this nefarious plot, but by then it was too late. He left before he could be caught, but not without leaving something behind. Me."
Rylan paused and tightened his hold around himself as if he was cold. I gave him the moment he needed, but I squeezed the back of his neck to remind him not to get lost in his memories. He took another deep breath and continued.
"My mother was never the same after that, and the leader broke off their union, which added to her turmoil,"
he said.
and then I only made it worse as I continued to get older. I guess I started looking more and more like the man who tricked her, and my face started to drive her mad until the sight of me would make her scream and try to hit me. I was sent to live with my grandparents for a while, and as long as I didn't cause trouble, I was allowed to stay, but that didn't last long.
He stopped again as his hands crept up to tangle in the thicket of his sandy hair, and he yanked and pulled as if he could physically remove the painful memory from his head.
I wasn't aware of it at first, but I started slipping into people's dreams while they slept, he continued,
as if he was determined to finish the tale no matter what.
No one told me anything about my father at the time, so I thought I was helping people whenever it happened.
What do you mean, helping people? I prodded.
I can't really explain it, he said with a frown,
as he stared off into the distance.
The best I can describe is that it's like a bell tolling somewhere far away, and for some reason the bell sounds louder if a person needs help, as if they're calling out. When I was younger, I couldn't resist a call if it was a strong one.
What's a strong call? I asked. Like if a person is having a nightmare?
Yes, but it's more than a nightmare,
he answered with a scowl.
It's really odd to explain, but the best I've come to understand is that most dreams are ultimately meant to help us, especially if there are lessons we need to learn.
Let me guess. You helped. I grinned and draped my arm around his shrinking shoulders.
When people dream, they don't understand they're dreaming and can't see things for what they are sometimes,
he said with a shrug.
I just nudged them in the right direction sometimes, or provided a piece of vital information so they would stop wrestling with whatever it was that was troubling them. At first, it was only my grandmother who knew what I was doing, and she told me to keep it quiet. The woman never nurtured me like I had hoped, but she was always honest and taught me about my mother, my traveller father, and the dangerous power I inherited from him. She warned me that if our village leader ever found out, I would be exiled. She was right.
He choked back a sob and buried his head back in his arms. Hey, bud, I said, and chafed his arm where I could feel a shocking chill start to creep into his skin. Let's take a quick break and put Ben and Jerry up, and I don't know about you, but I could use some hot chocolate.
What's chocolate?
He asked, as he peeped his head out of his nest again in curiosity. I couldn't quite manage to hold back my smile at the sight. You'll see, I said, and got to my feet. Come on. The two of us saw to the menial task of bringing the Porax into the barn for the night, just to have a bit of a breather from such a heavy topic. I wanted more than anything to know more about his life and basically who I needed to kill for this exile bullshit he mentioned. But I could tell the subject was too overwhelming to get through in one solid sitting. And I was serious about that hot chocolate, or chocotlet, as Rylan called it. If we were going to have this heart-to-heart, we both needed to be equipped with some chocolatey goodness. "Can you stoke up the fire, bud?" I asked him when we entered the empty kitchen.
"Okay,"
he said in a monotone voice that made me frown as I walked behind Arvid's workstation. We needed hot chocolate, stat. "What do we have here?" I rubbed my hands together and looked around at the cabinets and pantry items scattered about. Aha! One of those small canvas sacks Zoe's favorite Papa Sweets came in caught my eye, and I grabbed it, a small ceramic bowl, and something that reminded me of cheesecloth. Then I poured the round purple candies into the center of the cloth and balled them up.
"What are you doing?"
Rylan asked, as he came over and sat on one of the stools at the counter. "The center of these candies might work for our purposes," I said, and lightly crushed the makeshift cloth sack of sweets with the bottom of the bowl. I didn't want to completely mash them, but I wanted to break off the sour outer candy shell. When I had crushed them enough for the shells to fall away, I plucked out the dark maroon centers that reminded me of spiced chocolate truffles and threw them into the bowl. They had a texture similar to chocolate, and I just hoped they melted the same way. After all of the naked Papa Sweets were in the bowl, I bustled over to the small larder that was kept chilly with Omite cold stones and added some milk to the whole thing. Then I snatched up a wooden spoon out of the utensil jar Arvid kept on the worktop, jaunted over to the hearth, and scooted the bowl as close to the flames as I could. "Grab some mugs and join me, would you?" I asked. Rylan eagerly did what he was told as I worked on trying to incorporate the melting candy into the milk. Instead of a brown, it turned into a red velvet color that smelled pretty close to what I remembered, and when all the lumps had been smoothed out, I poured an equal portion into both mugs.
"Mmm, not bad," I said after I took a sip.
It kind of tasted like Mexican hot chocolate this way.
"Oh, this is so good,"
Rylan gasped, as he stared into the mug with a red velvet mustache across his upper lip and then took another deep gulp. "Don't drink it too fast," I warned. "You might get a stomachache." Rylan smiled sheepishly and lowered his mug as he tried to lick the remnants off his lips.
"Thanks,"
he murmured, while he stared into the flames.
"I feel a little better."
"Good," I said, and also cast my gaze to the crackling logs, so he would feel more comfortable to continue his story whenever he felt ready. Sure enough, Rylan mustered his courage just like he always did in the face of something daunting, and he took a breath.
"Someone in my village was having a recurring dream that grew louder and louder every night until the tolling was so loud I couldn't ignore it anymore," he continued. "I'll never forget the dream. In it, the dreamer was running as fast as they could through the forest of the Western Rise until they found a river where they could wash the blood from their hands."
"Blood?" I interjected, as I set my now empty mug down on the hearth.
"I was scared when I realized that's what it was, and I ran away the first night,"
Rylan admitted.
"But the next night it called me again, and I was also curious to find out who the dreamer was, because I didn't get a good look the first time."
"Naturally," I said, and ruffled his hair. "Nosy." He grinned like he wasn't even ashamed of the fact, but then a moment later he sobered.
"So, I followed the call of the bells back into the dreamer's dream,"
he went on, as he clutched the mug harder in his white-knuckled grip.
"There he was again, with his back to me as he crouched by the river to scrub his hands. But when I moved around him so I could see his face, I was surprised to find it was the village leader."
"Which made you even more curious, I bet," I said with a wink.
"Well, yeah,"
he scoffed as he rolled his eyes.
"The village leader never really liked me, and I thought if I could actually help him with his dream problem, then maybe he would see there was nothing to fear about my ability. So I did the stupidest thing, and tried to look deeper to see if I could understand what was troubling him. I guess I revealed myself to him because he threw me out of his dream and then stormed my former home looking for me. Only he didn't know I was living with my grandparents. He gave my grandfather just enough time to sneak me down to the southern harbour and onto a man's ship. I'll never forget how my grandfather handed over more than half his tithe stones for my safe passage to Nata. And I've been here ever since."
Somewhere during Ryland's story, my mouth had taken to hanging open in astonishment, but I closed it and cleared my throat. "Rylan, how old were you when you were forced to leave?" I asked.
"I just passed my 8th season," he said.
8? The kid was 8 when he basically had to fend for himself? Color me impressed. "And you've been alone this whole time?" I couldn't help but pry.
"Since I arrived on Nata," he confirmed.
"But," I deadpanned, "do you realize how resourceful you are to have survived for as long as you have? You're 13?
14,
he shrugged, and glanced away as if he was embarrassed by the praise. "Don't let anyone make you feel inferior ever again, you got that?" I told him seriously. "But still let them underestimate you. That way they'll never see you coming."
"Okay,"
he said with a lopsided grin. "So explain something to me," I said as I peered at him. "How can you sleep when you're prancing through other people's dreams?"
Actually,
he squirmed and shot me a furtive look.
"If I go into people's dreams, it's like I can't sleep at the same time, even though my body is asleep."
"Yeah," I said, and I poked the dark circles under his eyes. "I figured. But you need your rest, Rye. You can't keep popping into mine no matter how much you want to help me."
"But what if you fall into the Dark Realm again?"
he asked me with a haunted look. "The Dark Realm?" I frowned. "What is that?"
It's what I called a realm underneath dreaming, he said,
and then scowled at himself.
I'm not describing it right, but it's deeper than regular dreaming. Only travellers or those with traveller blood ever dream in this realm for some reason.
Is it a place with a glowing blue forest where clothing is optional by chance? I asked, as I suddenly remembered the weird-ass dream when I had to fight a shadow version of myself. Naked.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I was able to practice enough that now, whenever I'm in the dark realm, my spirit self becomes a canterfly, and I don't have to walk around without my clothes.
You! I gasped, when I remembered the blonde butterfly Pegasus who came to my rescue. You were the canterfly that flew me out of there.
You have to be careful down there. It's not like normal dreaming, he said,
and his brown eyes opened wide again.
If you get hurt in the dark realm, you get hurt in the physical world too. I found this out the hard way, see?
He then rolled his shirt sleeve up over his shoulder so he could show me a jagged scar along the back of his arm. What happened there? I leaned forward so I could examine it better.
I fell out of a tree and landed on a sharp rock, and when I woke up, I was still in pain.
He grimaced but then smirked.
Grandmother was so furious I got blood on her sheets. I couldn't sit for a long time after she got done whipping me.
I know you said she wasn't maternal, but your grandma sounds harsh, I remarked dryly to cover up how sad that kind of made me.
Her methods may have been cold, but she taught me a little how to control my ability,
Ryland said with a shrug.
I still miss her.
Maybe there'll be a chance for us to find her in the future, I said.
The wandering villagers don't stay in one place for very long, he sighed. And because I'm no longer welcome among the people, I can never find it again.
Ryland, buddy, I had no idea, I said, and put my hand on his shoulder.
It's okay, because I'm here now with you and Zoe and Shay,
he assured me, as if I was the one needing comfort. Maybe I did if my face was making the expression I thought it was.
Really, Dad? I'm fine.
I don't think I'll ever get over hearing that, I said with a fond smile at my foster son. Ryland smiled back and reached up to grip my wrist where I still had my hand on his shoulder. In that moment, I honestly felt honored this clever, kind-hearted kid chose to call me his dad. Truly. Then the stable boy's eyes glazed over briefly as he let out a huge yawn, and I remembered the matter at hand. Seriously, though, I chided. You don't need to check up on my dreams every night. You need to be getting your rest.
What if you need my help again? He asked.
I mused. Maybe we can come up with a code word I can think about really hard for you to hear like an alarm.
That could work,
he said, as he mulled the thought over.
That way I would only need to be awake if you needed me.
Exactly, I said, and patted him on the shoulder before I leaned back. Sound good?
Yeah,
he said, and gave one of those puppy dog wiggles.
What should our word be?
Make sure it's something you know you wouldn't hear in your own dreams, I said.
Oh, how about green sprout,
he suggested.
I hate them a lot, but my grandmother made me eat them. I'm not likely to dream about green sprouts, yuck.
It's like me and broccoli. I hate broccoli.
Broccoli?
He giggled through the word like the oddness of it tickled him.
What is that?
It's a vegetable that's green. Looks like a tiny tree and tastes like death, I stated.
Let's make the secret word broccoli, then,
Ryland gasped with an excited grin. Broccoli it is, I said, and ruffled his bangs. Hey, Ryland, do you know why travelers can reach the Dark Realm?
I don't know, but every time I go there, it's either on my own or with someone with traveler heritage, he mused,
as he finished off the remains of his chocolate drink.
When I worked at the palace, Lord Mech would frequently dream of the Dark Realm, but I never dared go in with him for fear he would treat me like the village leader if he knew my secret.
That's understandable, but you don't ever have to worry about Lord Mech, I said with a surety I knew was true. I'm pretty sure if Mech knew what the village leader put you through, he would be quite angry on your behalf.
Angry for me?
He asked, as if he couldn't quite wrap his mind around the fact.
Why?
Because, kiddo, I said, as I stood and helped him to his feet so we could both put Arvid's kitchen back to rights. You were 8 and didn't deserve to be banished because of an ability you were born with.
The leader was afraid of what I could do, he muttered.
Your leader was supposed to protect you, not fear you. I let him think this over as I washed out the mugs while he made sure to sweep up any of the hard candy shells of the Papa Sweets that may have fallen on the floor.
Oh, there you two are,
Shaelia said as she breezed into the kitchen. Her hair was tied up and off her neck with little strands attempting to escape their confinement, and she had a faint smudge of dirt on her cheek. But she looked radiant as ever and excited about something.
Rylan, honey, I hope you won't mind me stealing Alex away, but I have a small surprise for him.
A surprise?
Rylan grinned.
It's small mushy stuff.
The Phoenix woman winked and booped the stable boy on the end of his nose.
You. Okay. Dad, you're on your own,
he scoffed and put the broom back in its spot by the hearth.
Ha ha!
I laughed and roughly brought him in for a hug. That means you need to get to bed and actually sleep, okay? No broccoli.
No broccoli,
he repeated with a grin as he looked up at me. Then he gave me one more squeeze before he let go.
Night, Shay.
Good night, darling,
she said with a puzzled smile as the kid skipped out of the kitchen.
What is broccoli?
An evil vegetable sent to terrorize mankind, I deadpanned. I thought I was over my hatred of the vile veggie, but some things ran deep.
Now I'm even more confused,
she giggled, and then sauntered into my space so she could wrap her arms around my neck.
But that's all right. I'll let you boys have your little secrets.
How generous of you, I said, as I bracketed her petite waist with my broad hands. I always marveled at how doll-like she felt in my arms, as if she was made of delicate porcelain, and it tended to short-circuit my man-brain to where I actively had to tamp down the urge to throw her over my shoulder like some Cro-Magnon for some rowdy cave sex. Did I hear something about a surprise?
Maybe,
she sang, and backed me up against the table so I was forced to sit on one of the benches. Then she slowly hiked up her flowing silver gown so she could kneel on the bench between my knees and straddle one of my legs.
I hope you're thirsty.
Parched, I rasped out, and I let my legs fall open wider as my hands roamed up to lightly squeeze her perfect bottom. My gorgeous Phoenix wife leaned forward in a heady cloud of her jasmine-scented perfume, and I could feel my cock thicken in my pants. Just before I thought she was going to close the distance between our mouths, she instead reached around me for a bottle of wine sitting in the center of the table. Then she leaned back to perch on my thigh and uncorked the bottle with her teeth, and I felt the sound of the bottle releasing its pop of air as if it was connected directly to my heart. With the cork still poised between her heart-shaped lips, she tipped the bottle up to my mouth, and I took a drink of that fruity-slash-spicy wine I was growing quite a taste for.
Do you trust me?
She asked in an intimate timbre that sent shivers down my spine. Forever, I said. And I watched with growing arousal as she untied the silky scarf and undid the pretty jade comb holding her hair up. Her scarlet and gold locks tumbled down like a waterfall, and I couldn't help but run my hand through the long feathers at her temples. She breathed as her own shiver rocked through her, and she undulated in my lap. Then the tempting Phoenix woman dragged the silk scarf up the V of my tunic so I could feel the satiny texture across my throat and then over my lips. Shay, I groaned as I flexed my fingers around her waist.
Trust me,
she whispered, before she kissed me and then tied the scarf over my eyes. A thrill ran through me and caused my blood to sing. Lead on, I said with bated breath.